Dear friends, we have all of us got the man body, which is considered to be the highest in all being. The highest thing before us is to know God. And to know God, we have to know ourselves first, then we can be able to know God, because God cannot be known by outgoing faculties, intellect, or vital airs. It is the soul alone that can know God, for the reason being that like can only, alone can know the like. God is all consciousness, and we are also a drop of the ocean of all consciousness. We are conscious entities. We are spirit in man. The first question arises, whether we can know God. For this very purpose, we have joined various religions, which are our schools of thought. And what we find in the religions, we have got scriptures with us, and what are the scriptures? They are fine record of the experiences of the masters who came in the past, which they had with God. First of all, to have the right import of the scriptures, we would require somebody who has experienced that way. Because the Master said what they saw, what they experienced. They never told anything at the level of feelings or emotions. Or they never said anything as a matter of trying inferences to arrive at some conclusion. They experienced, they saw, and then gave out. Son knows the Father and others whom the Son reveals. Who has seen God, he can alone help us to see God. So we find what we now have got interpretations of the scriptures with us. They are, most of them are done by intellectuals. They interpret them at the intellectual level. And that is why you find differences in the interpretation of one man and the other. When any man says one thing, for instance he says it is a tree, well, he means by the word tree a tree, you see. He never means a dog or animal or elephant. So those who try to interpret them at the level of intellect, they differ from one another. That's the cause of so many schools of thought in existence. Had they seen, had they experienced what the masters have seen, saw, and experienced in their lives, they would have told the same thing. There would have been no difference one bad from the other. So we need somebody who has that experience. He will be able to give us the right import of the scriptures. By reading carefully the scriptures, we find two kinds of statements. One is, nobody has seen God at any time. And at some other places we find the Master says they have seen God, they have experienced God. The question was put to Christ, whether there was a God. He said, behold the Lord. No reasoning. He saw. And he was competent to let others see God. This very question was put to Guru Nanak. Is there a God? He says, God is seen everywhere. He is pervading everywhere. I see him everywhere. There is no place where he is not. It so happened that in his lifetime he paid the pilgrimage to Mecca, the place, the holy worship of the Mohammedans. He went out there, he was lying at night with his feet towards the Mecca, that building, house of God. And one man came up in a very strong voice, he said, don't you see that your feet are towards the house of God? He said, friend, I see God is everywhere, there is no place where he is not. Where you consider that God is not, you may turn away my feet towards that side. The real one asked the same thing. He says, I've seen him in every atom. He says, I was in doubt before. But with the grace of God in man, God man, I now have seen everywhere, my all doubts have vanished. So these many questions I put to others too. So Vivekananda, who also happened to come to America too, he was an atheist before. He used to challenge people, is there any man who has seen God? And he was led to one, Sri Ramakrishna Paramahansa. He was in Calcutta at the time. You see, masters, they don't act in pose. They live in their natural way, in a very simple way. He had a cloth around his lands, and wearing a shirt, bareheaded, he was walking. And the people told him, here's the man who has seen God. He went to him and put him a very blunt question. Master, have you seen God? And he said, yes, my child, I see him just as I see you. And more clearly than that. So these are something we go to show some testimonies that they have seen God. If they have seen God, those who ever will meet him, they will also be able to see God. Shama Savai tells us, we should be able to see God with our own eyes. We should be able to hear the voice of God with our own ears. And this we can do only in the man body that we have got. That's the golden opportunity that God has given us. Now the question arises, with what eyes we can see him? All this the eyes of flesh and bones, let's get see him. This question I put to Guru Nanak. He says, those eyes are different with which we can see God. Those are not the eyes of flesh and bones, but those are different eyes. This very question was put to Lord Krishna. He says, you cannot see him unless you see through the latent eye that I give you. But that eye is referred to as the third eye or the single eye. That eye is within each man, whether he has got eyes on his face or not. If the blind men have got that eye, but that is closed. So, you'll find, they have to say they are all eyes. You find in the Bible too, I, the light of the body, if thine eye be single, thy whole body shall be full of light. How did the eye become single? That very eye is called the eye other than these of flesh and bones. That very eye is called by the third eye. That very eye is called as the Shivnetra or the latent eye. These are the statements we find in the scriptures. So they bear out that they have seen God, and also they've given a provision to those who ever met such a personality who has seen him, is competent to let others have a glimpse of him. And what do we see? God is light. All masters say that. Of course, they say it in their own language, which was prevalent at the time when they came. So that eye is within each man, and also we can hear the voice of God with ears other than these ears. But we find also in scriptures that our eyes are sealed and our ears are also sealed. Unless those seals are broken, we cannot see the light of God, cannot hear the voice of God. And Christ addressed his disciples, blessed are you who see things what the old prophets and the righteous men could not see. You hear things what the old prophets and the righteous men could not hear. So from these places you find there is something to see and something to hear. Now let us see ourselves what we say. Can we definitely say that way? Whosoever you'll ask, you'll say, I feel God. The feeling is your own weight, is your own make. Somebody will arise in emotions, and in emotion you say so many things, but these are also the result of feeling. Someone will come up and say, yes, as a matter of inference, there is a God. I happened to attend a conference. There were many sadhus and others in India. The talks were given. One sadhu came up and said, look here, be ready. I'll just show you God. He gave a very wonderful talk as a matter of inference, you see. Quite appreciable, but you come to some conclusion in not seeing, see. So, almost majority of them, almost all of them, I would say, with rare exceptions, they all speak of God as a matter of feeling, as a matter of emotions, or as a matter of drawing inferences. They have not seen God. Such like persons we have seen in the past, even now the world is not without them, but they are few. So if we can see God, and those who have got the man body, they have got the birthright to see God. And for that very reason, we have joined various religions, the social forms of the religion. They are our schools of thought, in which we are joined to know God. So this question is there, hidden, I would say, in each one's heart. Can we see God? I quoted you from scriptures, you see. Both statements that nobody has seen God at any time, and also they say they have seen God, though both are true. They are given from different levels. The first statement is made from the level when the God was in an absolute state, in a worldless state, when God was not did not come into expression, it is called world. And the other statement is all right, when he came into being, there are two phases of God, God is light and God is some principle. So we can see the light of God with the single eye, or the third eye, or the latent eye, or the hibernator, which is within each man. If that eye is opened and the seal is broken, you will bear testimony that there is God. You will also break the seal over your ears, and you will bear testimony that there is the voice of God reverberating through all creation, that the music of the spheres. So whenever masters come, they have solved this mystery of life. They saw God and they assure us we can also see God as they have seen. Because, as I told you before, it is the like that can alone know the like. We are embodied souls, conscious entities, but our souls are under the control of mind. Mind is under the control of outgoing faculties, and outgoing faculties are given up so much so to the outward players, that we have identified with them so much so we have forgotten ourselves. The first question will arise, how to know ourselves? Because God cannot be known by feelings, emotions, drawing inferences. It is the soul alone when it is liberated from mind and outgoing faculty. This is the first thing that we have before us. That is all Master said, self, know thyself, who you are, what you are. Are you this 4, 5, 6 feet high body that you are carrying? You say no. Because we have seen with our own eyes, such like bodies we have carried on our shoulders, to the burial place, or to the cremation place, according to the customs of each religion. So similarly, body we are carrying, we are to leave it someday. There is no exception to the rule. So we are under a grand delusion, I would say. We have found by reference to the scriptures that there is a possibility of seeing God. The masters come to say, they take up the same question. The reason you see the masters, most of the masters who came in the past, they were never educated in any universities. Ramakrishna Paramahamsa was quite illiterate. So Prophet Muhammad, Kabir was never got any degree from the university. And do you think Christ has attended any college? So this is a matter of seeing what I am telling you. This experience can be had not at the level of intellect, only when you rise, when you are physically, intellectually still. There is no question of intellect arises. Be still. Then you know God. So all masters who came, they saw and gave out. Of course, learning is a flower of, is a garland of flowers round the neck of a practical master. He can explain things, the same thing in so many ways. From all, from the different vocabularies he has got at his command. But even if the master is not has any degree, that PhDs, he sees and says, he simply reports from the vocabulary that he has got around him. But he has seen, he can give you a practical experience of self-analysis, knowing yourself, open your eyes to see the light of God and you bear testimony to it, there is that. So such like persons in the company of such like persons, we can also have an experience of God. So when masters come, they, that very question that is just lying in our, at our heart of hearts, they question him well. What is the way to know God? How can we know God? So the state of self will, without any reasoning, go to somebody who has seen God. Now you find vast difference between seeing, feelings, emotions and drawing inferences. Who sees God, Son knows the Father and others whom the Son reveals. So who is that in that God man or the Master, you see? Who has seen God, who has the competency to connect you with God. God resides in every heart. There is no heart without it, all scriptures say. In whatever human form that God is manifest, that manifested God alone can enable you to contact with him. He is God, God in him, not the Son of Man. He is competent to raise any soul from the bondage of mind and matter and give him a contact with his own self, his own self, which is manifested in two ways. God is light, God is self-principle. Call him by any name you like. There also, there are degrees and degrees. Nowadays, it has so many teachers, so many masters. There are different subjects. In any subject which relates to our outgoing faculties, we need somebody to guide us there. The man who wants to become a doctor, medical line he takes up, you know, there are medical books already existing. But only by reading the medical books you cannot become a doctor. Because it is a matter of knowing the system by anatomy, how the system works, how it is retarded, how that can be removed, that evolved the retarding factor, and that can be resumed in the normal way. This is a subject of practical anatomy. When you sit by such a person who has really gone through it, he will be able to tell you how to do it. You know, dead bodies are taken to the medical colleges, the institutions, shown how to do anatomy. A chemist might be able to give you hundreds of prescriptions for the same disease as given by different doctors. But he can make you a chemist, not a doctor, mind that. Similarly, the one who has analyzed the soul from mind first, he has controlled the outgoing faculties from outside and liberated his mind from the clutches of outgoing faculties and analyzed himself from mind, he alone can know himself. When he knows himself, he sees that controlling power. So in spite of all these scriptures which are with us, we do need somebody who has, by self-analysis, liberated himself from mind and outgoing faculties, knows himself and knows that controlling power which is keeping us in the body and all the universe under its control. I gave you therefore yesterday night that our bodies work so long as we are in the body. And our bodies, we work in the body so long as we are controlled in the body. There are so many apertures, eyes, ears, nose, mouth, etc. We cannot run away out of it. Breathing goes out, the sub-power is bringing it back. It cannot remain outside. So when we analyze ourselves from the body, we can see that controlling power which is keeping us in the body. So first of all, we need somebody who sees God. He sees God and can others make see God, give that very expression of God. So I told you that teachers and teachers have their own lines, but the one who has analyzed himself and sees God as I see you and you see me, such a person is required at whose feet we will be first of all able to have the right import of the scriptures. All masters who had the truth is one. Those who realized that truth, they gave out the same truth. Of course, in their own languages and in their own modes of expression. But they say the same thing. They say God is light. Mohammedans say God is Noor. Hindu gentlemen say God is Jyoti. They all say the same thing. But those who have had no experience of that, what do they say, the intellectuals? God is intellectual light. Because they have not seen light. So my viewpoint is, if there are people who have seen God, they cannot differ from one another. That's a common sense talk I give you. The right answer to a question can only be one, not two, three, four. So for that what we need, first of all, a teacher, call him by any name you like, someone who has analyzed himself, God in every heart, but in his heart that is manifest. God has got no equal, no parents, no brother. Who can give you a contact with God? You will only have to say, the God manifested in any human soul alone can give a contact with any soul to himself.
Good evening. Welcome to the satsang from Master Kripal Singh. The recording that was just played was the first 30 minutes of Master's talk given on December 7th, 1963 at the Spar Heights Community Center in Glendale, California. Our reader this evening is David Halliburton. Hello, David.
Hi, Pradeep. Thank you. I'll be reading tonight from Chapter 5 of The Night is a Jungle by Master Kripal Singh, and it was also published in the February 1968 issue of Sat Sandesh. I have heard that many have seen you, but actually none has known what you really are. O Satguru, myriads upon myriads of people greet you and bow in obeisance at your feet. But few recognize your greatness in the measure in which you may choose to reveal. Son knows the Father, and those to whom the Son may reveal. He is a living embodiment of the Father of light, and it is only through his grace that he manifests this light of God in others. I shall now tell you what the Guru is. It is best to know of him from some Gurumukh, that is, one who has become a mouthpiece of the Guru. For it is said, a prophet alone can recognize the prophet. All great masters the world over have presented the same eternal truth, each, of course, in his own inimitable way. They say that the divine power of God resides in every human heart, but the heart wherein it is manifested the most is worthy to be adored. A perfect living master is an embodiment of the power of God, and as such, he is much more than what he appears to be. He does live in this world, but is not of this world, as the soul in him is in tune with the infinite. O Lalo, Nanak says, I do not speak anything on my own, but whatever I utter, I am inspired by him. Though physically he, like us, may look to be a denizen of this world, yet inwardly his soul is free from the shackles of mind and matter, and is in perfect harmony with the universal life principle. All great masters bear testimony to this sublime truth. Who can give us the tidings of God? Who can unite us with the living lifelines as provided by him? Since he is peerless, self-created, and the causeless cause, how can we possibly get to know him and realize him, and with whose help? It may therefore be taken for granted that merely by our own manifold efforts, we cannot get near him. If there is God, there must also be a God way, which in turn leads to the irresistible conclusion that there should be a God-man who has practiced God and is competent enough to lead us on the God path. Without such a human pole star, we cannot know of the pole. It is just plain talk. It does not involve any reasoning, nor is there any ambiguity about it. Sages and seers have always spoken in the third person for our guidance. Kabir says that he is conversant with the mysteries of the beyond and has brought a message from the Most High. My master, Hazar Sawan Singh Ji, also was a true messenger of God. If we were to hear directly such master souls, we would get from them sublime truths, illustrative of their inner greatness. Once he said, "Whenever we come to this physical plane, we bring with us our own staff to work with us. When our work is finished on one side, we are deputed onto the other." You can well understand what this signifies. Similarly, all other masters in the past have said the same thing. The 10th Guru, Guru Gobind Singh, says, "Having become one with him, I had no intention whatsoever to come back to this world. But, willy-nilly, I was made to do so to fulfill the divine purpose." Christ also said the same thing, "I and my Father are one. He who has seen me has seen the Father. Father knows the Son, and the Son knows the Father." Guru Arjan says, "Father and Son are dyed in the same color. The Father and Son have entered into a divine partnership." All masters have given their own version of the same thing. Shamas Sabrez says, "O people of the world, do not look at my tattered clothes. Just try to peep into the innermost recesses of my mind, for then you will know of the vast kingdom of God to which I belong. Do not take me as a poor mendicant or a helpless being like yourself. I am much more than what I appear to be, and am blessed with untold treasures of spiritual riches." Continuing in the same strain, he says, "We may be likened to an experienced physician. We need not feel the pulse or test the urine of ailing patients, but through their eyes we look deeply into the deep-rooted maladies of the mind. We have with us a panacea for all ills of life and freely dispense the same." During my second tour in the USA, I happened to give a talk on Christmas Day. I told the congregation that Christ lived long before Jesus did. It is just 2,000 years ago when Jesus came into the world, but the Christ power was always there working for the spiritual welfare of humanity at large. Significantly enough, Christ remarked, "I am that I am." The master soul never dies. It is eternally present from end to end. The great divine power, when manifested at some physical pole, is known as the living master. Just try to understand that guru power is nothing but the power of God. In the Gurbani it says, "He who is the ever-living God power is called a guru when it adopts some human pole for working in this world." Satguru is the great immaculate power. Do not mistake him for the human pole from which it works. The servant of Hari, or God, is like Hari himself. Please do not be mistaken by the physical raiment of the servant. As explained so many times, Hazur was the son of spirituality. He is ever with me and lives with me. The spiritual stalwarts come whenever the world is in need of them. Guru Nanak came when there was a tremendous rift between Hindus and Muslims. Kabir also came in the same period. Both of them preached, "God is one, and all mankind is one. All persons are in soul bodies. The soul is of the same essence as that of God. The various religious orders were set up for just one purpose, spiritual emancipation. But, alas, they have degenerated into strong fetters and manacles for our hands and feet. We had started Godwards, but unfortunately got stuck fast on the way. We had entered into religious orders for God knowledge and God realization, but became contented with the labeled liveries of socio-religious forms and formulas. The result is that we have failed hopelessly in our search for God. We had joined the different social orders just to equip ourselves for the realization of God, but sidestepped God and got engaged in internecine quarrels with each other in the blessed name of religion. Millions of people have been sacrificed on the altar of religious fanaticism. Hazur too came at a critical juncture when many sects at variance with each other were at loggerheads. Guru Nanak, when questioned as to who he was, replied, "If I say that I am a Hindu, as apparently I happen to be, with all the outer hallmarks of Hindus, you will surely kill me. But at the same time, I am not a Muslim either, in the sense in which you take it to mean by outer signs. My real character is that my physical being is made of five elements of nature, while within me, God's divine power is at work." As we are usually apt to forget this great lesson, the masters come to revive it as and when necessary. The first problem the masters tackle is to knit the children of God in the silken bonds of love, sacrifice, and service of one and all. They have to bring all children of God together to one common platform. My master came to the earth plane when there were many diverse sects in Christianity, Sikhism, Hinduism, Islam, and many other creeds. He delivered his message to the people to learn to sit together with love and to try to understand the basic concept of the one divinity that is working in the entire creation. In the Gurbani, it states that the wisdom of the seers is all alike. Those who have realized their own self regard all mankind as one. The various sects, creeds, and religions are like so many schools of thought and outward forms, like so many hallmarks adopted by us. But all the same, in spite of these seeming differences, we are basically human beings, and the soul in man has the same attributes on a miniature scale as those of God. From this lofty viewpoint, all are alike. It was Hazur's great desire that there should be some common platform for teaching the science of the soul to all, despite differences in their outlook on world, color, or creed. Ruhani Satsang was the name suggested by Hazur for such a forum. He was a Jivan Mukt, a liberated master soul, and had come for the liberation of humanity. It was once suggested to Hazur that he should form a distinct sect or religious order dealing exclusively with spirituality. You will be surprised to know how gracefully he replied, "What earthly good will it do to dig more wells where too many already exist?" All that was needed at the moment was to find out the water of life already referred to in various scriptures. Truth, or divinity, is already existing in man, and those who have realized it say the same thing. But those who have not seen the reality are vainly engaged in fighting the varying ideological beliefs and doctrines. The principal aspect of his teachings was that we should be able to sit together in love for understanding the divinity which forms the common bedrock for humanity. We are already one and must try to know the one in us. We are blessed with the same type of eyes, ears, hands, feet, etc. And from the level of the soul, we are also one. The God we worship is one for the whole human race. He is the Lord of us all. As we are likely to lose sight of this fundamental truth, the Masters come from time to time to revive it. So the first lesson which we get from the Master is that we should, while remaining in our own respective religions, strive to realize our true self, and then realize the self of the universe, and finally the great truth, which is the very life of all creation. To find this truth, it is necessary that we should know what is true living. Guru Nanak says, true living is higher than knowing the truth. A truly blessed life flavored with divine love is above everything else. Such a life is conducive to spiritual uplift. Just as an electric bulb, when clean and neat, sheds clear light, so does a life free from all blemishes. The purity of life, or man-making, as it is called, was the outer work which my master accomplished, and it is admittedly the only way that leads to the welfare of humanity and prepares the way for spiritual development. It is spirituality alone that offers any hope for the security of man. I once happened to talk with Pandit Jawaharlal Nehru, the first Prime Minister of India. He listened to me with rapt attention for about 50 minutes. And since then, in his speeches, he used to emphasize that spirituality was the only common ground where mankind could live in peace and amity. Spirituality, then, is the only remedy for all ills of mankind. And leaders of all thoughts, social, political, or religious, could derive their inspiration from it. We are all worshippers of one God. As men, we are all alike. It is on this common ground we can meet irrespective of differences in religious creeds and beliefs, social customs and living habits, which are of little consequence. The Rig Veda exhorts us to participate in congregational prayers in which thousands may join to glorify the Lord. This great lesson of the Vedas has once again been revived by the great master, my Hasur. It is not something new. It is the ancient science. Since we had forgotten it, he came to remind us of it. Historically, the Vedas, which contain the wisdom of the ages, are the oldest of all scriptures, whereas the Guru Granth Sahib is the latest compendium, incorporating the teachings of as many great souls of different times and climes as could possibly be collected at that time. We have great respect for all who had enriched our spiritual heritage and have left for our guidance a valuable record of their personal experiences with the great self within. All great masters have in fact said the same thing, of course, in their own language. The Holy Quran says that God sent his prophets to different parts of the world. A true Muslim is one who believes in all the messiahs of God. Similarly, a real Sikh is one who accepts the teachings of all masters as recorded in the Guru Granth Sahib, a veritable banquet hall of spirituality. If this divine message is carried to all, then peace and harmony will reign supreme in all homes, societies, and countries. In my second tour of the West, I had an opportunity to meet political leaders of different shades of opinion, and I always dwelt on the principle of live and let others live. God had put so many children of his in their loving care, and it was their duty to serve them as best they could. If one country could not, for one reason or another, properly look after the welfare of its people and attend to their legitimate needs, let others extend their helping hand to them. Why resort to violence and shed the blood of millions of his creatures? By the grace of God, the timely realization of this basic truth actually helped in preventing a crisis on two different occasions when things were getting out of hand. I received an SOS from a third place as well. I am placing these facts before you just to stress the importance of spiritual unity, which is the only way out from our present difficulties, as it will enable us to get nearer to each other and be able to solve our problems. But here, there is one difficulty: differences in views and cross purposes. Guru Arjan has therefore suggested a remedy. Let us put our heads together and, in a spirit of friendliness, iron out all our differences with a determined will born of burning faith in God. Just learn to sit together in love, leaving aside all thoughts of duality, for we are all children of God. Do we not worship one God, who is God of all, though our modes of worship may be different according to the environments in which we are born and brought up? When we are already one on the common ground of spirituality, like rosary beads of different designs and colors, then where is the scope for conflict? The Gurbani tells us, let us get united in the name of the Lord, for we are not apart from him. So this is the way that leads to unity in diversity. For diversity circles around the center, the unchangeable permanence. Guru Arjan has also emphasized, sit together, shoulder to shoulder, in the company of one who has become Guru Mukh. Gurumukh means the mouthpiece of the Guru, who is the human pole from which the power of God works. I would like to stress the importance of spiritual understanding. Kabir says, "In this world there is none more munificent than the Guru. In fact, he alone is the giver of all gifts." The blessings of the Master are indeed very precious. Let us see what he actually bestows upon the disciple. Gurbani says, "Satguru has granted me a priceless boon, the holy Nam, and has explained to me the mysteries of the beyond." This is something which lies beyond the pale of the senses, mind, and intellect. He alone is in a position to grant such a boon, and no one else can, for none can give what he does not have himself. It is something which one cannot acquire by mere learning and wisdom, or by study of the scriptures. Who else could give the wonderful gift of the power of God? We also find in the Gurbani, he grants us his own life impulse and makes manifest the saving lifelines within. Who can do this? None but a polarized God on earth. Guru Arjan also says like this, "Having manifested himself in the Master, he himself distributes the holy Shabd." On the one hand, there is the absolute God, and on the other is the power of God, or God in action. And unless the power of God becomes manifest in us, we cannot possibly have a contact with God. As it is the living Master who can grant us this contact, his importance to begin with surpasses that of God himself. Though the two are but one and the same, yet in finite terms, we have to differentiate between the two. Kabir says, "When the Master and the Lord both are standing before me, to whom should I offer my obeisance? Definitely, I will bow to the Master, who has been the means of uniting me with the Lord." God, the Absolute, is an abstraction which no one has and can know, and hence we can bow only to the personified God where God's power works. Just as there is a powerhouse which you have not seen, but you see in your house a small switch which serves your purpose, similarly the living Master is in possession of all the divine virtues and powers granted to him by the Absolute God for the spiritual welfare of humanity. Thus, it is quite clear that we have to adore a living Master, for the physical body of the Master is superbly divine, having been made by invisible hands for a specific purpose, to work through him in bringing about a union of human souls with himself. If, with all this, we still regard the Guru just as any one of us on the human level, it is our misfortune. I'll stop this reading here. I was reading from the Night is a Jungle, Chapter 5, entitled Guru, Gurudev, and Satguru. And it can also be seen in the February 1968 issue of Satsang Desh. Thank you, Master.
Thank you, David, for reading Master's gracious words. for us. 57 of us attended today's satsang. Thank you, everyone, for listening. And thank you, Master, for providing this for us.
Be not deluded as we are now. We think perhaps this is the only place. This is, we will live here forever, but nobody has lived here forever. This is a golden opportunity we have got to find our way back to God.